Jim Conley, Executive Marketing Manager for Anatomy and Physiology here at McGraw-Hill Education. I am so excited today. I have a special guest in the studio here at 501 Bell Street. Her name is Julie Thompson, and I'll tell you really quickly, I just met Julie literally a day ago. I've heard of her before. She's an awesome person. She actually works in our instructional design department here at McGraw-Hill, which is new to me. I'm encouraged that we have it. But what I thought we would do today on the Succeed in AP podcast is talk a little bit about what is instructional design, what do you guys do here, Julie, and just have a conversation about some of the things that maybe we talked about in the past couple days. So I am tickled to have you here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
It's going to be fun. So tell me, what is your official role here at McGraw-Hill Education?
Well, my official title is a learning experience designer. And what that involves is really, it's in primarily two different buckets. The first bucket is really providing consultation services and support to the product development teams to help them implement instructional design into their products. And the other large bucket is really helping McGraw-Hill employees internally learn more about instructional design to really support the vision of being a learning science company.
And I can speak to that. So I was one of the people that took the course that you all developed, and I was so excited about that. I learned so much about instructional design. There were some things that I had not known before, not only about learning science, but then just instructional design as a principle, as a discipline. Mm-hmm. And I got a lot out of that. And, you know, for me, I've been through online education. Yeah, that's how I got my graduate degree. So I've been exposed to a lot of these things. I've been in education for close to 20 years. But yet it's just such a fascinating element of where we're at right now, because I really feel like we're on the verge of the most exciting times in education. Would you agree?
I absolutely think so. And especially as we're moving more and more into the digital world and using digital tools and online education, instructional design is such an asset in that arena to really make sure that we are implementing those digital tools and we are using technology in a very intentional, meaningful manner so that students are really maximizing their learning.
You got it. And I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, but we're developing some newer products that if you're interested, you can always email me and we'll get you involved in the process. But it's the main reason why we have Julie and her team really working in collaboration with us to make sure that when we think about, like, in our markets, a majority of the students, around 50% of them will drop, fail, and withdraw the course. And the common reason why they will do that is they don't have a foundation to be successful in the course. So we're developing some new items that Julie and then a panel of subject matter experts are working on with us from the field in terms of the science piece of it, but to make sure that we really nail this down so that we have the best product we ever could have. So I guess maybe a good way to start, Julie, will be, what is your definition, if you will, of instructional design? Or for our audience here, like, what would you tell them about it, like, in terms of layman's terms?
Well, instructional design is really about just being a systematic process that creates effective learning experiences that are engaging for students, that are efficient, and that results in strong student learning outcome performance. There's a variety of different ways to approach instructional design. Typically, what we are implementing at McGraw-Hill is an approach called backward design.
And so yesterday I learned about backward design for the first time, and I was kind of giggling, I have to be honest with you. At first, when I heard backward design, I was thinking about, you know, my wife teasing me. So one thing that maybe the audience doesn't know is when I was younger, I had dyslexia. So I had a learning disability, and with that, you know, often you're seeing things backwards or you write things backwards. So it's kind of an inside joke every once in a while, but thankfully through a lot of help with educators, I was able to correct the learning disability. But I always was like, holy smokes, what is backward design? So do you mind for the audience explaining to them what is backward design and why is it significant?
Sure. And really, the term backward design is really coming to play because this approach is really designing with the end in mind and moving backwards. And that's where it's sort of coined from. And it's really thinking about, there are three separate stages to it. The first stage is really thinking about, what should students know or be able to do when they're exiting a course? What are the key concepts? What do they need to walk away with? What is that essential learning? And when you can articulate that, very clearly, then you can craft very solid, measurable learning objectives that serve as really the foundation for your curriculum. The next piece of that is determining your acceptable evidence. And that really just means, how are you going to assess it? What's your method of assessment and figuring out what is the best one? For any given learning objective, you may assess it in a variety of different ways, but figuring out what's the best way. And once you do that, then you really know that you're setting students up for success. And the last stage is, now you know your learning outcomes. You know what your assessment's going to look like. Now you can do all of your meat and potatoes of your instructional planning. You can look at content. You can create content, identify content. Think about practice activities that students need to have to support them on their journey to achieving success on their assessment.
When you said begin with the end in mind, that's really to me where it all crystallized. And I was thinking about, you know, my son, he's actually in third grade, and they do the Stephen Covey's 7 principles of highly effective people. They layer that in the curriculum. And that's one of the things that they talk to them at an early age about, is begin with the end in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, in my words, not stealing that from Stephen Covey, but I always think about, why are you doing something? Start with
right.
the why. Why are you doing this? And to me, that's what I learned through the backward design, is really that one element. And then everything that you just talked about is really how we're going to shape our products so much differently here moving forward.
Right. And building upon that, if you think about, especially in higher education, and you're thinking about the adult and how an adult learns as opposed to the K-12 environment, adults are really looking for instruction to be meaningful for them. They don't want to waste their time, and they want it to make sense. So designing with the end in mind really makes sure that they can see their learning outcomes. They can see that everything that they're being asked to do as part of the curriculum is lining up with them. And then when they're being assessed, they can feel confident because they know, everything I did led up to this. I didn't do something weird. I didn't do anything extraneous that doesn't make sense why it was there. And that really helps students feel engaged and feel like what they're learning is valuable.
Love it. Now, let's maybe transition gears here to a fun topic. And you and I were talking about this yesterday. I said, hey, Julie, what is your pet peeve? Like, what's something that you see in the market, if you will, and it's either just drives you crazy? Like, we can't keep doing that.
Well, I really think it's something that I don't even know that it applies only to the market. I think it applies in everyday life, that we've probably all seen it. And it's the concept of chunking. And for anyone who may not know, in instructional design, chunking is really breaking up massive quantities of information into more manageable pieces to process. So I think everybody could relate to, you get a massive email or a massive letter that it's one paragraph long and it's taking up the entire page, and you're halfway through reading it and you forget what you've read at the very beginning. It's just information overload. And chunking, the beauty of it is, now you can break it up into different sections, and that makes it easier to process and retain the information.
And that's one of the many things that I learned when you guys built your instructional design course for mm-hmm. us, is what is the concept of chunking? And I think it would be fun maybe down the road to maybe talk a little bit more about the concept of chunking and how we do it here at McGraw-Hill, how we can do it more effectively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, moving forward, and then
Absolutely.
Maybe do some like thought leadership pieces possibly on that. So
okay.
I like it. Chunking is definitely a common topic.
Widely applicable.
Yes, yes. There you go. Okay, so with McGraw-Hill Education, I'd like to know, and maybe if you don't mind sharing with the audience, what has been one of the most significant accomplishments or something that you'd like to share with the audience?
I think that what's really great about McGraw-Hill is we're taking into consideration that there are a wide variety of instructors out there with a wide variety of perspectives. And one of the targets that we were looking at recently for an accounting course that I was working on are those instructors who are very interested in digital. They really like the concept of digital tools, but they've never used it before. So they're thinking to themselves, I love it. I have no idea what to do with it. And that is so intimidating and can be a barrier to adopt it. And what we did is we put together an entire guide that really walked them through step by step what to do, what the content is, how you can utilize all of the different components within the platform, or how can you make connections across a video and translate that into your face-to-face classroom after students have engaged digitally with the content. And some of that was just making recommendations for activities. This is what students looked at in this module. They're now coming into your classroom. Here's an activity to bridge that, bridge the gap. And so it really provides a foundation for those instructors to meet that need so that they can become comfortable with using digital in their classroom.
So what's a McGraw-Hill education challenge that you don't mind sharing, you know, that you see out there?
Right. So I think the biggest one is, as we've transformed into a learning science company, instructional design is so important to really meet that goal of integrating learning science. And obviously, everybody at McGraw-Hill is not an instructional designer, right, is not a learning experience designer or a data scientist.
Right.
But there is excitement about being a learning science company and what that means. And I think the biggest challenge right now that we're facing, and we're making a lot of great progress, we still have a long way to go, is getting the word out to everybody across the company about what instructional design really means and how we're integrating it into our products so they can have some more in-depth conversations with customers about how our products are supported by instructional design principles. And we're getting there. We've provided a lot of resources for people that they can refer to, and we're always available for conversation. But it's a work in progress, and we will get there.
Well, from my perspective, so you're an industry expert in instructional design. I'm more of like, I'm in the marketing role. I've been in the anatomy and physiology discipline for a very long time, fortunate to have that experience. But I really want to acknowledge our leadership here at McGraw-Hill. Mm-hmm. So I know Scott Verkler, Marty Lang, awesome people, and many others that I may not know of or that I can't, you know, acknowledge because I can't remember or whatever. But the fact that they said, we want to invest time and resources to build this course,
right,
from wonderfully talented people like you and the other people that are on your teams. I'm not saying that just because you're on this podcast. You're just awesome. But so the fact that you guys built that and then it was deployed to everyone.
Right.
And it was really one of those things where they said, it's mandatory for everybody who is working here to go through this.
Right.
Now, the benefit for me is, you know, obviously being experienced in the discipline and in marketing. Now, when we get involved in product development, like we have been for the past couple of days, I now know what chunking is, just to use that one example. Mm-hmm. And now I'm much more fluent in really seeing where we can help not only our instructors, but our students. And that wouldn't have happened if I didn't take the course. The other thing, too, our human resources staff here is amazing. I'm not just saying that because they might be listening. Hopefully they do. I'll make sure I at least make them aware of this. But we have lynda.com here. Mm-hmm. And I know one of the things that Marty Lang had emphasized is make sure that you go through, you know, some of the modules that we have on lynda.com about, mm-hmm, you know, e-learning. I did one on marketing, but then just on instructional design and those other things, mm-hmm, are so critically important because they really, right, make us better prepared to, you know, be a professional in this field.
Exactly.
So it's great. So thank you guys. Everybody I've mentioned and beyond, thanks for doing that.
Well,
it's
I'll pass great... along the, you're welcome.
Yeah, well, hopefully your team will listen to this too. That'd be good too. And if they want to get involved in the podcast, they're more than welcome down the road. Although Julie's like, I was here first. All right. So a couple questions left. Okay. And I might even give you one curveball.
Oh boy.
I know you're like, Jim, you said you weren't going to do this. Okay. So we'll keep it close to what we talked about earlier. So your favorite feature in Connect, what is it and why?
I really think that it has to be the reporting features. Absolutely. They are great for both students and instructors. Students really being able to see how they're progressing, what they're successful with, areas of need where they maybe need a little more remediation. That just greatly improves their metacognitive abilities. And that is a skill that they can translate their entire lives. It's going into their careers. They're applying it to their personal life. There's so many more ramifications than just in this isolation of being in this one particular course. For instructors, they're able to see progress on an individual level. They're able to see progress on a class level. And what makes that so excellent is they can adjust their pedagogical approach. They can adjust how they might introduce materials. Do they need to bring an additional resource in it? Do they need to individually meet up with students to make sure that their needs are met? And the reporting features all assist with that. There's no guessing games anymore. The information's right there.
Yeah, and that makes it a lot easier for us on the marketing side. You know, using right. features and things like that. It's just really a natural thing to say to someone, use our resources here in Connect. You'll be able to teach better. And probably the big thing for all the folks that are listening, we all know that we want to catch students before they fall too far.
Exactly.
You know, anatomy and physiology is a conceptual course. And often that's the name of the game, is just trying to get into the know about where they're deficient so you can help them faster.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the name of the game, and that's what Connect A&P does so extremely well.
Absolutely.
It's one of the reasons why we have this campaign that you learned about earlier, I think, called MHE Happiness, and highlighting all the positive user stories that we have for
right.
our products, which is fun. Okay, so I think I'm going to do one or two more questions, if
okay.
you don't mind. Your biggest surprise. So Julie spent 2 to 3 days here with our team. We're doing some product design, product development discussions. What was your biggest surprise about the anatomy and physiology discipline, our team, or anything over the last couple days?
Well, if you'll indulge me, I have two surprises for you.
You got it.
The first one is really just diving into the digital assets that you have available. Lots of media, lots of digital tools, simulations, great things that support anatomy and physiology already in place. And these are the types of things that make the content real world applicable for students, even if they are taking a course online. And that was really excellent to see. That was awesome. The second piece was when we were all meeting together and I gave a presentation on some of the foundationals on structural design. There were a lot of people in the room. And it wasn't just the people who are actually developing the product. There were people in marketing that were interested in it, and people in sales that are having direct conversations with customers. They have a keen interest in it. They want to learn about it, and that is awesome.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because to me, that is one of the hallmarks of our team. Not to toot our own horns, that every single member of our team is so curious about how we can be better, how, you know, faculty can teach better, how students can be more efficient in the course, how the technology can be deployed, how our print assets can be used better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so much fun. And I know when you came into the room, you know, a lot of us had not met you before.
Right.
And then when you started talking, you could see where we were all lit up about, like, hey, we need
right.
to find out more about this and the questions we were asking you. And then that's one of the reasons we're here on this podcast today, is I'm like, oh my goodness, we got to share with the world all this wonderful stuff that we're doing here. And we're not perfect. We all know that. But it is.
I'm not perfect either.
Right.
So.
It's a special thing that we have here. And I just wanted to share the perspective. So are you ready for one curveball question?
I'm not sure.
Okay. It'll be kind of an easy one. I always like to ask every one of my guests about what their vision for the future is. So for you, when you look at either our company in learning science, or could be just the field of instructional design, what's your vision, or what's Julie's view of where we might be in like 5 or 10 years?
I really think that for me, the vision of the future is about the perception of online education. I think that right now there is still a perception out there that it is not, in terms of quality, the same as maybe a face-to-face classroom is. And I think that there have been a lot of strides made for curriculum, for online students or hybrid students or the flipped classroom to be extremely rigorous, just as rigorous or even more rigorous than a face-to-face classroom. But the stigma's still there. So what I would really like to see in 5, 10 years is to see that stigma go away.
Boy, you just made me smile ear to ear. So there are two things I'd like to share with the audience. The first of which is we have a wonderful article that we have on our webpage about how Steve Sullivan moved his A&P course online. And one of the things that you'll learn in there is there's some philosophical things that Steve used in getting his course online. But then the thing that was interesting is he talked a little bit about how this is a river, and you could either go down the river in your own vehicle, if you will, or you could try to fight the river. Well, it's going to go there anyway.
Right.
And what he talked about, you know, in his video and then some other things is if I'm going to build an online course, then I want to have a hand in building the best online course.
Exactly.
And I think you heard him earlier talk about how it's more rigorous than he ever could imagine. It's because of the digital tools and the fact that he's constantly thinking about what can I tweak.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he probably won't want to add this, but, you know, in any given year, you might have a step back. You have some good ideas that you put forth and they don't really work out. And you take a step back and there are other years where you're going to make some big strides forward. But number two that I'd like to share with you, and I don't know that you and I have really talked about this, but my master's degree is in marketing and e-commerce,
okay.
and I got it online.
Okay,
and
yeah.
you probably know this from spending some time with me. I'm a relationship person.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working here in the marketing capacity. McGraw-Hill has a tuition reimbursement program, so I finally looked myself in the mirror and I said, I need to go get my graduate degree.
Mm-hmm.
I need to walk the walk, so I did that. My only option, because I travel a lot, is to do it online.
Right.
Well, the stigma always has been, and even still a little bit today when I tell people, you know, they'll say, oh, you got your MBA. And I'm like, yeah, I got my MBA. Where'd you get it from? Walden University. Well, where is Walden University?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, well, they have a physical location in Baltimore and in Minneapolis, but I got my degree online. And you can just see how sometimes people will literally wince.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll think, maybe you don't have a master's degree, even though you just said that.
Right.
But they kind of discount the online degree.
Right.
And I remember there's a professor, his name was Dr. Craddock, and he was the toughest professor that I had when I was going through the curriculum. And he was really hard on us. And what was interesting about him is he taught at Brown University.
Okay.
And the reason why he was so hard on us is he said, I don't want to have anybody ever see a difference between what I do at Brown and then what I do here at Walden. And I think the takeaway message there for all of you that are listening is often when you look at any course, regardless of the institution, whether it's a community college or a four-year school, the instructor really matters.
Right.
And what that instructor does is really key. So
absolutely.
That's why we're so happy that Julie came here today. We're happy that you guys are all listening. And what I'd like to do is we're going to end now. I know Julie's pretty busy. We got to get back to the meetings. But I'd like to ask you all, if you love this episode, you want to see more of things like this, just shoot me an email. But then the bigger thing that you can do for us, which is a big favor, especially if it's positive, is give us a rating on iTunes. That's a way that we can get people aware of what we're doing here in Succeed in A&P or Stitcher or wherever you consume your podcasts. We really appreciate that. And then formally, Julie, I want to thank you for spending time out of your busy day to share that with the rest of our audience. And is there anything you'd like to say in parting here with for the group?
I want to thank you first for having me on here. It was really exciting. And, you know, I just really want to say that it is fascinating to see McGraw-Hill turn into a learning science company. It's wonderful. It's exciting. And I'm happy every day that I'm here.
Yeah, it is. It's literally the most fun thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary sometimes because it's so, like, wide. Really, there's so much that can happen. But the opportunities there, and I'm glad that we have wonderful investments, not only in our technology, but most importantly, our people.
Right.
We talked about that on this podcast, and you're a really good example of that. And I'm just really thankful that you were here, too. So thank you right back.
You're welcome.
So for everybody listening, we really appreciate your time, and we'll see you roughly in a couple weeks here or maybe in a week on the Succeed in A&P. Thank you all for listening, and we hope that you have a wonderful day.